Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. Hey, good morning. It's Sunday, June 24th, 2007. It's a little bit later than normal. It's 0836 Greenwich Mean Time. And it's field day in the United States. I was reminded of this morning. I got an Echolink call from somebody who was out there in the field, and it brought back all kinds of memories of field days from my youth. I was a member of the Crystal Radio Club in Rockland County, New York, at W2DMC, and we had a really great field day site. It was one of the Nike Hercules missile sites that was that surrounded New York City. There were no Nike Hercules missiles up there at that point, but we were able to use the site. It was up on top of a hill, of course, which is where you'd want to put the missiles. So it was great for us, great for antennas. There was kind of a clear space up there, good road access, and we went up there. I remember several years of activity with the Crystal Radio Club. My Elmer was Hilmar Meyer, WB2NEC, and he was great help, and all the guys from the club, it was terrific. It was great fun camping out with ham radio. I got to say, though, that when I got the call on Echolink from the fellow in the States who was active on field day, he described his situation. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and they were out in the field. You could almost hear the mosquitoes buzzing. And I was quite happy to be sitting here in my comfortable London ham shack with no mosquitoes buzzing around me. Those of us who man the home stations are also doing our part. I think I've found my place for field day, and it is in the home station. I will be one of those people manning the home stations, the shacks, providing the link for the field stations to talk to. Anyway, good luck to everybody who's out there on field day, or by the time they listen to this, are recovering from field day. A great ham radio tradition and a lot of fun. Let's see, just looking around the shack here. Want to give you an update on my power supply project. This is probably my last homebrew project here in London. The end of our time here is rapidly approaching. I told you last week the antennas are down. That makes band sweep segments kind of difficult, of course. So no, we won't have any of that. But none of that this week. But I did manage to get the power supply that I've been working on finished. And it seems to work just fine. It uses the L200 chip that Tony Fishpool used in his design. I managed to straighten out all the bugs that I had inserted in it during my rather hasty construction project, and so now it's regulating and current limiting just like it's supposed to. I did one kind of additional thing. I took the about the 26 volts DC going out of the rectifier chip before it went into the L200 regulator chip. I just ran a line to an output jack on the cabinet, so that I have now from the power supply a regulated and current limited output from about 2.5 to about 18.5 volts. But then I have another set of terminals on the outside of the box that provides an unregulated about 26 volts. And I put that in there with the idea that someday I may decide to experiment with little higher voltage levels, especially on the final amplifiers, especially when using IRF 510s or other field effects transistors. Sometimes you see circuits that call for 24 volts instead of 12 volts, and so this gives me the ability to do that. For now, I'll stick to the 12 volts. I had some fun putting this thing together. The circuit diagram calls for a 10K pot, a 10K variable resistor, to determine the output. So I ordered one, and I got one from DigiKey, but it was just one of these tiny little things, and when you turned it, there was no kind of mechanical tension or friction at all when you turned it. And the power supply that I had stripped to build this one had this nice big potentiometer in there with it just when you turned it, you felt like you were moving something substantial, almost like you were turning the valve on a big hydroelectric project or something like that. It just gave you the feel that you were increasing voltage or controlling significant amounts of electricity there. I don't know if you guys know what I mean, but anyway, it was a 5K pot, and the circuit called for 10K. And I know that I'd get much more kind of a voltage range using the 10K pot, but I just like the feel of the 5K pot, so I took out that old modern that took out that little modern kind of computerish wimpy 10K pot and put the big 5K pot in there, and it works just fine. I'm not able to vary the voltage quite as much as I was with the 10K pot, but well, it has its compensations. It seems to work just fine. The thing looks really good, and it's case painted black. I'll have to take a picture of it and put it up on the website. And it just looks like a serious power supply. I think a power supply should look kind of serious, ugly, ominous, potentially dangerous. And so this thing does. And anyway, it's been a great, been a fun project, and I hope to put it to use when building things in Italy. Another bit of follow-up. I think last week I mentioned that George Dobbs, during his presentation at the 4 Days in May event, had mentioned my ham shack. Stand by a second here. I got to close the door. It's a little bit later in the morning, and the kids are up. Hold on. There you go. It should cut down on the audio frequency interference a bit. Anyway, George had mentioned or shown a picture of my shack and mentioned solder smoke during his presentation at 4 Days in May. And he had mentioned the concept of wabi-sabi, and he had said that my shack was an example of wabi-sabi. And I did some quick checks on the Wikipedia, and I thought I came to an understanding of it. I guess my understanding was incomplete, and a couple of guys sent in emails telling me that I was a little bit off the mark, and that that George was actually being his comments were actually more laudatory than I had thought. I mean, I thought they sounded fine to me the first time, but I thought he was saying that they were that the shack was beautiful in an ugly kind of way. Which, for somebody who uses ugly construction techniques, I fully understood it, and I was happy with that. But apparently, he was saying even nicer things than that. So, anyway, I told my wife about wabi-sabi. My wife is a garden designer, and I mentioned to her the concept of wabi-sabi, and she started Googling and Wikipediaing, and she was really pleased with the concept. She had not heard about it before. Immediately ordered a number of books about wabi-sabi and is now incorporating the concept into her designs. So thanks very much to George, not only for including the M0HBR ham shack in his Dayton presentation, but for alerting us to the importance of wabi-sabi and helping my wife in her garden design efforts. So thanks again, George. Let's see, what's next? Got a lot of email about Mr. Wizard. I had mentioned that Mr. Wizard, the guy who helped amateurs deal with the knack, or actually may have caused the many radio amateurs to be afflicted with the knack through his television programs in the United States in the 1950s and 60s. Got a lot of email about that. I had never really watched Mr. Wizard, but it seemed like it was the kind of thing that all of us young radio fiends would have been interested in. I came across a website, and I'll have to dig it up and find it and put it on there, that kind of indicates that nowadays Mr. Wizard would have been busted. It's not really about ham radio. And I have to be careful about this because it'll cause my comments on this will cause some people to think I'm going back to our April Fool's spoof presentation on the illegality or the New Jersey law making it illegal to solder in the home. But the reality is not too far from that, guys, because there was a couple of things that appeared on the web in the last week about how they have basically made chemistry sets illegal in many parts of the United States, or the whole country for as far as I know, and there have been some sites out there talking about how sad this is and how this is having an impact on the ability of kids today to do the kind of things that most of us did as kids years ago. So I thought that was kind of sad. I'll try to dig up the URLs and put them on the gadgeteer.news website, it's kind of a scary precedent for us, because if they can outlaw chemistry sets, well, imagine what, just take a look around at your ham shack, guys, and imagine what outsiders would think of this. I've had a couple occasions this week where people were coming in to look at the house and take a look around in preparation for our move, and I always just try to look at their faces as they walk into the shack and see how they're going to respond to the to the wabi-sabiness of this particular part of the house. I think I might have mentioned on a previous solder smoke that because my kids have always been in a house where there was a shack, a radio shack, they thought, until I guess they were like 4 or 5, that all houses had, you know, a shack in it. You know, there's the kitchen, there's the living room, the dining room, the bedrooms, and the shack. And it was only when they went off to school and got these kind of quizzical looks from their classmates that they realized that not all the little boys and girls have houses with shacks in them. Poor things. Anyway. Yeah, so we got to watch out, because if they're after the chemistry sets, man, they're really going to come after us. I found a great site about Tesla Down Under, and I'll put this up on the gadgeteer.news website. It's just some really amazing pictures and links from some people in Australia who were messing about with Tesla coils. Man, the authorities want to go after some. Here's what we do: anybody starts talking about going after radio amateurs in the same way that they're going after chemistry sets, we can, as a diversionary tactic, point them to the people who build Tesla coils, and that should keep them busy for a few years, because, man, even to a radio amateur, this stuff is really scary. The make.zine blog had a picture of this, looked like about a 6 or 7 foot tall Tesla coil, firing directly into the face of one of the mad scientists who built this thing. But of course he was surrounded by a Faraday cage, and the electricity was being shunted to ground by the Faraday cage. Talk about having a lot of faith in your screening. This was really really kind of interesting. So I'll put that up on the page. One thing you guys might be interested in. I took a look at the stats on solder smoke, just trying to get a sense of where we have listeners, and I made some mistakes in my assessment about the number of listeners we have in China. I think that I may have interpreted the numbers wrong coming out of the statistics pages on the website. But anyway, because what I was seeing was lots of hits, but not a lot of bytes downloaded. So this time I just took a quick look and looked at those the listing by country that seemed to indicate that people were actually downloading the podcasts and not just hitting the site and then moving on. And really kind of interesting. I mean, it indicates that we're getting downloads, and I assume listeners, from all over the world. There were listeners in Namibia, Saudi Arabia, the Faroe Islands, Pakistan, the Philippines, Taiwan, Israel, Argentina, Thailand, Indonesia, Hong Kong, and it just went on and on like that. So I'd like to ask that if you're listening from any of these locations or any place in the DX category, from the perspective of hams in the United States or North America, you know, please send me an email. I'd like to hear where you're listening from and what you think of the show. The vast majority of the mail we get is from the U.S. and Europe, and I think it would be fun to get some mail from further afield. And we get a lot of email from our friends in India too. We'll always like to get more, of course. But if you're in what would look like a DX location from this part of the world, please send us an email and let us know about your thoughts on the show and home brewing and melting solder and all the crazy things that we discuss here. Kind of combining ham radio with language studies. I've been using the Italian version of Sprat. I think I mentioned this. They did a nice article on Mike and his power measuring return loss bridge experiments. They published it shortly after he passed away. But I've been using that as a kind of practice for reading Italian. It makes it more interesting when you're reading about electronics and QRP. And I've also been making use of Echolink for language training purposes. I've been forcing a number of very patient and generous Italian radio amateurs to suffer through my excruciatingly bad Italian as I struggle to get a bit fluent in the language before we arrive in Rome. And so I thank all of the Italian radio amateurs who've been putting up with me and encouraging me. It really is a great tool. I could find somebody to talk to in Italian on Echolink just about every time I fire up the program, and it's been a great help. And it certainly increases the confidence level and provides that very important conversational element to language study. So once again, ham radio comes to the rescue. Speaking of which, I got a nice email about somebody who's been, I mentioned him last week, been talking to me about Richard Feynman and his connections with ham radio. I had mentioned the book Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman, and I'd focused mostly on the chapter that dealt with his youthful efforts to fix radios, to repair radios. And I missed the chapter where he discussed something else. Hold on a second. There's another bit in this book about ham radio. I'm going to try to flip through here and find it. I mean, it's in the chapter that deals with his adventures in Brazil and his going to Brazil. And let's see here. I hope I can find it. Oh, it's really a pretty good chapter about Feynman studying Portuguese and struggling with it. It made me feel better about it. But anyway, he talks about adventures on Copacabana Beach. I hope I can find it here. I should have had it marked. Here it is. During that 10-month stay in Brazil, I got interested in the energy levels of the lighter nuclei. I worked out all the theory for it in my hotel room, but I wanted to check how the data from the experiments looked. This was new stuff that was being worked out up at the Kellogg Laboratory by experts at Caltech, so I made contact with them. The timing was all arranged by ham radio. I found an amateur radio operator in Brazil, and about once a week, I'd go over to his house. He'd make contact with the ham radio operator in Pasadena, and then, because there was something slightly illegal about it, he'd give me some call letters and would say, "Now I'll turn you over to WXYX, who is sitting next to me and would like to talk to you." So I'd say, "This is WXYX. Could you please tell me about the spacing between the certain levels in boron we talked about last week?" And so on. I would use the data from the experiments to adjust my constants and check whether I was on the right track. The first guy went on vacation, but he gave me another amateur radio operator to go to. The second guy was blind and operated his station. They were both very nice, and the contact I had with Caltech by ham radio was very effective and useful to me. Well, great. Not every day that we get to help somebody like Nobel Prize winner Richard Feynman, and I didn't realize that there was that bit about ham radio in the book. So that's great, and thanks for the fellow who pointed that out to me. Let's see. One little final bit here before we go to the mail. I often find myself thinking about circuits and ham radio and technical problems as I walk home from work each day here in London. And I think one of the reasons I do this is because all over London, as you walk along, in the sidewalks there's these little discs. I guess they're about 10 to 12 inches in diameter. And what they are is they're like miniature manhole covers, and it's where they used to pour the coal when London was heated by coal being burned in individual houses. They would come by and they would pop these things off and pour the coal down there. I think they call them coal plates. But at least on the route that I walk every day, the plates were manufactured by and patented by some local inventors known as the Hayward brothers. just like W7ZOI, just as his last name is spelled. So I think that this may be one of the reasons that as I walk home from work each day, I find myself thinking about experimental methods in RF design and things like that. I've sent Wes a picture of the coal plates. All right. Anyway, you could tell I'm running out of things to talk about. I guess it's time for... All right. And now here's the warning. Brace yourselves. The gong is about to be sounded. 3, 2, 1. All right. I hope we kept that within appropriate audio levels. given the lack of automatic gong control. Got some nice mail this week. Let's see. One kind of an inspirational one. It says here, "Hi, Bill. Thanks again for the great podcast. I hope your preparations for the move to Italy are going smoothly or as smoothly as one of these moves can be. Yeah, that's right. Smoothly is not the word for it. It says here, your podcasts have been very instrumental for me jumping into home brewing. I picked up a used oscilloscope at the Rochester Hamfest and put it to good use by building up Farhan's 40-meter DC receiver. I pretty much followed Farhan by first building the AF amp, then the VFO. This is my first time trying ugly-style construction, and I found it a lot easier than I had imagined. The AF amp was built up on Sunday and worked nicely the first time. No parts released their latent smoke. Tonight, I finished the VFO, and it oscillated about the right frequency, and it oscillated nicely as soon as I powered it up. All I can say that it was quite satisfying to see the nice sine curves at just about the right frequency, especially since this is the first VFL I've built from scratch. I'm hooked on the electronic home brewing, and it is all due to solder smoke. Well, thanks very much. That's really nice to hear. And that's from Scott K2CK. Great. Thanks, Scott. This one is from Gil, NN4CW. Good call there, Gil. It says here, Dear Bill, I hope your family enjoy the next move. There are worse places to live than Italy. Indeed. Yeah, that's right. We're really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be great. I have recently pleasantly discovered solder smoke. It is the staple of my morning walks with my dog, and I listen to a new episode daily on my MP3 player. I've just started last week, so I'll be good for the next 2 months. I thought you might be interested in the one-tube superhead design by Jack Bryant, KE4ID. He uses the three-ganged air variable capacitor and the IF transformer from an ARC-5 receiver, which yields passband front-end tuning with the turn of one dial. The radio is both sensitive and selective. During the Crystal Radio Club's 2007 One Active Device Contest, which was over 2 weekends, 6 days, I identified 245 medium-wave stations from my QTH in Savannah, Georgia. I logged over 12 stations of 1,000 plus or more, I guess he means miles, including KDIA 1640 on the Bay Area of California, 2,400 miles from my QTH, and KSL in Salt Lake City, Utah, over 1,800 miles from here. The radio is a hot performer and withstands my miserable local station QRM, which overload regens. And he provides a link for a complete description. I'll put that up on the web page. Thanks very much for alerting us to that, Gil. It sounds very interesting. And finally, kind of a funny note. I guess it wasn't that funny at the time. This is from from Dave, the M0CIF. Hi, Bill. Another good show. I always look forward to Sunday. First thing I do is check for emails and download Solder Smoke into the MP3 player, which I then put to one side and get on with the day's jobs and so forth. After supper and the day's work is done, what is better than a soak in the bath and solder smoke? Whoa. But Bill, MP3 players don't float, and sorry to say that you went maritime. No damage, though a warm hairdryer soon dried it out. You know, I'm thinking, Dave, that the hairdryer in the tub, you know, it might not be a good idea. So I hope you managed to separate those two operations. But I'm glad to see that you managed to repair the MP3 player. Good work, Bill. 73 from Dave, M0CIF, Maritime Mobile. All right. Hey, that concludes another edition of Solder Smoke. I think we're going to have maybe one, maybe two more from London before we pack up and get out of here. So if there's anything you'd like us to comment on here in our final days in the English capital, let me know, and we'll try to work them into the show. Please send in some emails. We'd like to hear from you. But anyway, for now, it's 7-3 to the big group from London. 7-3.